Well, I ain't gonna work on Maggie's farm no more, no more. Said I ain't gonna work on Maggie's farm no more, no more. Well, I wake up in the morning, close my hands and pray for rain. Got a head full of ideas that are driving me insane. It's a shame the way she makes me scrub the floor. Well, I ain't gonna work for Maggie's farm no more, no more.
Welcome to Truth Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett, waging the Allah struggle for truth, bringing on four or five great guests to tell you all sorts of interesting stuff that you probably won't be hearing in a whole lot of other places, especially over in the corporate-controlled mainstream. Today, we're going to address one of those heavily censored issues, the kind of issue that if you bring it up, you get rotten throat, immediately thrown at you by the usual suspects, and that is, well, the title of the book is The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews. This was put out by the Nation of Islam Research Group. It drew all kinds of fire from people like the ADL. By the way, I've had, I think, six of those fatwas from the ADL in the last few years. So they're pretty active when you touch on sensitive subjects like 9/11 or this secret relationship between blacks and Jews. And here to talk about it with me is Dr. Ridgely Abdelmumen Mohammed. He is an agricultural economist and leads the agricultural wing of the Nation of Islam. He's also with the Nation of Islam Research Group, and has done all sorts of interesting work on this topic of the secret relationship between blacks and Jews, which is a two-volume book put out by the Nation. So without further ado, welcome Dr. Ridgely Abdelmumen Mohammed. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine, sir. Great to be here. Great to address this issue. And a little bit of background, I think, that people need to know. Because a lot of times the ADL and other people say, well, these are anti-Semitic books, Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews 1 and 2. But people need to know a little history about this struggle between Minister Farrakhan and certain members of the Jewish Zionist community. In 1984, Minister Farrakhan came to the defense of the brother who was running for president at that time. What's his name?
Was that Gary Hart in 84?
No. The black man.
Let me in 84? 84. Not Jesse Jackson.
Jesse Jackson,
okay.
Yeah, in 84 he ran for president, and the Jewish community didn't like his comment on Haimetown. And so they basically threatened him. And so Mr. Farrakhan brought the Nation of Islam's Fruit of Islam to his side to protect him. Mr. Farrakhan said, you know, we can't lose Jesse. We can't lose another black leader. So, and after that, the certain segments of the Jewish community start chanting. He gave a presentation in New York City, and they were outside chanting, "Who do you want, Farrakhan? How do you want him dead?" Now, remember, this is 1984. The books came out in 1991, The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, and 1991, and the second book in 2010. And what inspired the researchers to look into this was the question, what did Minister Farrakhan do to get the hatred of the certain sections of the Jewish community to this heated level? Because, you know, Honorable Elijah Muhammad, you know, said that, you know, we can eat the Jewish food. You know, they have a certain diet like we can learn a lot of things from their business practices and how they stick together and teach their children their history and educate their own.
It's never a problem to say positive things about that community.
You know, so, you know, it was positive things. And so all of a sudden, here we get this hatred. And, you know, we had considered the Jews to be friends to the black community because they were involved in the civil rights movement all the way back to the development of the NAACP. So we looked at them as friends, but now all of a sudden they're enemies. So what's going on? So are they hiding something? And this is the research that was done to find out, oh, wow, they're not really our friends. They've been using us for hundreds of years. They were instrumental in the development of the slave trade. And yet they try to hide their hands because they're the ones who write the books. And then in the secret relationship between blacks and Jews, number two, we get more into their real dominance, economic and political dominance of the South. Now, I'm down in Georgia, and I saw the synagogue down here near Albany, Georgia, and I'm from North Carolina originally, and, you know, this is a myth that the Jewish community were afraid of the KKK, like the blacks, and therefore they were dominant mostly in the North, and they were afraid of the South. But actually, the secret relationship between blacks and Jews reports that they first did not enter New York City. They came through Charleston, South Carolina, and they came through Charleston with slaves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't hear much of that. We hear a lot about Jews being represented among the carpetbaggers who were basically the friends of the freed slaves.
But we
don't hear this.
No, we don't hear this part because they are the writers. They are the ones who do the history books. Okay, so they wrote themselves out of history in this area, where there were many officials. I mean, even Judah B. Benjamin was the Secretary of State for the Confederacy. Okay, who was a Jew, and he was a Secretary of State. The Jews were very instrumental in the cotton industry and the banking industry.
There's been some talk about the Rothschild banking cabal over in London having supported the South during the Civil War. Is that right?
That's right. They had their like Judah B. Benjamin, when he lost, he took a bunch of cotton and fled to England to go back underneath the protection of you know, his the people who sent him here, who ruling things through him. And in fact, when the KKK was developed after the Civil War, they went to England to meet with him to get money to get started. So this issue of and they're on both sides of the war. And this is something that the Zionists, the Jews, they do. You know, they play both sides, so they were funding both the North and the South.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But they were very instrumental in the South, all through the South, and that's what the books brought out. And they brought out that they hid. Matter of fact, in W.E. Du Bois' Soul of Black Folks, came out in 1905, he actually used Albany, Georgia, as an example of how the Jewish immigrants were running things in the South. In particular, in Albany, Georgia, but then he was influenced by his patrons. In 1954, when he rewrote the book, he took out Jewish immigrants and just said immigrants.
Interesting.
To hide the strength of the Jewish immigrants in the South, and just to put it out as just, you know, German immigrants, but East European immigrants, but not that they were in fact Jewish immigrants. And so this whole game, you know, they pushed us into civil rights, which was a philosophy of the NAACP of non-economic liberalism, that they would not push for economic development, but just to be able to be, you know, sit next to white people and go to parties with them. And this was complete opposite of what the Niagara Movement was about. They usually tell you that the NAACP was an offshoot of the Niagara Movement. Well, that's not true. They took one of the 19 original members of the Niagara Movement, W. E. Du Bois, and like the wildebeest, taking a, you know, the lions taking a wildebeest, you know, pulling away from the herd, pulled them away from the herd and had them underneath their control, and they set up the NAACP. But the Niagara Movement, these black men were all about political and economic development, not social integration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really interesting kind of dichotomy, because it does seem like it's been proven by history that the civil rights movement really stalled when it came to that issue of real empowerment and economic development And it, you're saying that it sounds like there was kind of a plan to do that.
It was. And they point out in the secret relationship between blacks and Jews that the Jewish leadership understood exactly what they was doing. They were saying that, you know, we would use the scapegoats. That as long as the whites, the non-Christian and the Christian whites, and the blacks were at each other's throat, then nobody would bother to look at the people who was taking both of us money, both of them's money.
Now, of course, when we say things like that, we're referring, is it to basically the bulk of the organized Jewish community, to the leadership of the organized Jewish community?
Well,
there are a lot of ordinary Jewish people who are obviously not trying to do this stuff.
Yeah, and this is what Menzel Farrakhan continually to try to point out. He talks about segments of people within the Jewish community and not to put all of this on all of the Jewish community, because he has some very Orthodox Jews who are friends of his and to support him, because they are not down with this Zionist move themselves. They're not down with Jews coming from Germany and Russia taking the land from the Palestinians. That's not biblical. That's just something that the Zionists have made up for an excuse to get in the middle of the Arab world and take over from the inside, which they are doing. But it's not all the numbers. But, of course, you know, the same way they come at the Muslims and they say, well, look, why don't you Muslims denounce the bad Muslims? Well, you know, Menzel Farrakhan has been saying for years, those good Jewish people need to denounce the behavior of the bad ones, because then it's looked at, all of them are part of it.
But part of the problem is the bad ones tend to be concentrated at the top economically and in terms of political power.
Well, the thing is, you know, that's what bad ones do. You know, bad ones get at the top of the economic and political work. Because, I mean, if you're bad, you got to get at the top, because you got to have control economically and politically so that you don't wind up in jail or your head cut off.
Mm-hmm.
All right? You don't want to be bad and unpowerful. You know what I mean? The whole point of being bad, people are not bad just because they're bad. They're bad because they want to get something. They want to make somebody else their slave. They want to have people working for them, and they getting all the benefit, and they're not putting out anything. That's what makes them bad, and of course, those are the ones who rise to the top. Whereas the good people, you know, they don't, they work, and they get a just return for what they do, and they're not interested in getting more than a just return. And of course, that keeps them in a position where they don't have a whole lot of money compared to those who are willing to do anything and everything and use anybody and everybody, including their own people. As more is coming out about this Holocaust, the so-called 6 million Jews who were killed, you look more in depth in it. It was really a ploy. It has worked well. It's got the whole world's sympathy behind them, so you can't say anything about them. You can call it anti-Semitic, which, of course, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has made that very clear, that the people who are taking over Palestine are not Semites anyway. Mm-hmm. They are Europeans who have accepted Judaism.
Right.
For 700 years ago. Not any of them that have, they weren't born in the Middle East and lineage back to Palestine or Jordan or Jerusalem. Nothing like that. These are people who accepted Islam, and accepted Judaism, because they were given the choice of becoming Christian, Muslim, or Jews. And these are people up behind the Caucasus Mountains. They're behind the Caucasus Mountains for years, away from the rest of the world, because they were bad people. They had to put them up there. And then they had a choice of whether they're going to choose. They chose Judaism. And then they have used that to push back the rest of the Sephardic and the Mizraim Jewish populations. And they have become the head of the Jewish world, and their aim has been to dominate.
So some people call them the Khazarian Mafia. They're from that Khazar tribe,
right?
It's said. Do you think that the real issue is you know, the bloodlines back to Palestine or not? Because, I mean, really, Palestine is the holy land for all of the monotheistic religions, and there are like more than 1.5 billion Muslims who view it as their holy land. And of course, it's been administered by Muslims almost ever since Islam began. And then there are 2 billion plus Christians as well who venerate it. So there are only maybe, 10 to 20 million Jews in the world. And yet they've tried to say that, according to the Zionists anyway, Palestine is supposedly exclusively Jewish, or it's really there's some kind of special relationship with Judaism rather than these other Abrahamic monotheisms. That just, I never understood that.
Well, if you look at it, it's called you know, divide and conquer. You know, why? Where the, if you look in the Muslim world, the history of the Muslim world, They allow people to keep their Judaism and their Christianity and still be within their kingdom and not kill them, as long as they pay tribute, because they were considered part of the three Abrahamic traditions, you know. But the Jews got something else in mind, and they want dominance. They actually believe that they are God's chosen people and chosen for the purpose of ruling the rest of humanity. Mr. Farrakhan says that the real chosen people are the black man and woman in America, and our job is to serve humanity, doing the will of God by serving humanity and not by enslaving humanity. There's a difference in an opinion here in terms of the role of the chosen.
Well, the Quran says the only difference between people is their good works and degree of piety or faith.
That's right. That's right. You have to prove it. You have to prove it through your... I mean, it's like Ms. Farrakhan said, we are the chosen of God, and that. But that's something that has to be proved. Mm-hmm. We just can't run off and say we are the chosen of God and ain't doing nothing to show that. Mm-hmm. So the only way we can take that position is do what we're supposed to do, and that is to serve God and to serve humanity, regardless of creed, color, or race.
Well, this that's what Rabbi Weiss says. He's from the Naturae Carta anti-Zionist movement, mm-hmm. and he says that Jews are chosen in that sense. They're supposed to be the most morally upright and so on.
Right. And Mr. Farrakhan has pointed out that what the Jews were supposed to do was to take their the Mosaic law and teaching and to help their brethren, other, you know, whites. But they didn't do that. Instead, they used their knowledge to rule over people, both black and white, and to play games and to get us to fight and kill one another. So they're the ones who pushed integration, knowing that that was anathema to the Southern whites. But they pushed that to keep us at each other's throat, where the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that what we should do is separate until we learn how to do better towards one another. But right now, as long as we are with white people, they're going to try to dominate us, because that's what they want to do. They could have done it. They brought us over here to be a slave. They didn't bring us over here to be free and equal. They brought us over here to be a slave. And what has happened is that we don't die, we multiply. So we've continued to grow in population, and now we're a problem. Whenever you do the research, you find that as long as it's less than 6% black in an area, you don't have much problem with discrimination. But as soon as it gets over 6%, 8%, it's kicking in.
Same thing with Muslims.
Huh?
Same thing with Muslims. The countries that pass a certain number of Muslims, they start turning Islamophobic.
Yeah. It becomes politically and economically an issue when you want all the benefit to yourself, and you know you're doing it through political and economics. And it's, if people get a certain number of people where they can have some political and economic power, then that's a problem if your goal is not to share but to dominate. So as long as they're too weak for them to question your dominance, then, you know, they're okay. But as soon as you see that a threat, you're threatened by your, they're not trying to take you over, but you know you survive by ruling others. I mean, look, they came to America. They found over 20 million Native Americans here, and with war and diseases wiped them out, and have no intentions of giving them back the land. As a matter of fact, they got them sitting on reservations that is really owned by the government. And when the Native Americans in those reservations die, the American government is going to take that land back. So it's not, they have no remorse for doing that. As a matter of fact, when the Pope came over here, he basically told the Native Americans, you know, well, thank you very much for your gift to us. It was no gift. Y'all took it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Come on now.
Thank you for your gift. Thank you for dying for us.
Yeah, right. Thank you for dying for us and, you know, giving us your land. You know, no. You took it. So this
thank
thing
you for taking the smallpox blankets and all of that.
Yeah, right. You know, accepting our gifts. And so when Mr. Farrakhan comes along and brings these truths out and asks us to to separate and then let's build our own. And we would trade with well-meaning white people, Jewish people, whatever. We would trade with you, but we need to have our own. How come everybody can come over here and have their own enclaves? And when we try to have our own enclaves, we're called anti-this, anti-that, racist, versus racism. But everybody else can come here, and it's okay for them, but not okay for us. Well, it gets back to the reason we were brought here. We were not brought here to be free. We were brought here to be slaves. We were brought here to be used. And they're not intending for us to do any economic development. Another thing that was very important in the secret relationship between blacks and Jews was the whole history of these black codes. You know, in these black codes in the South, where you know it was illegal for five black people to be together, okay, by themselves without masters there. It was illegal for black people to carry arms to defend themselves. It was illegal for black people to go to court and to testify against a white person. Well, if you can't go to court and testify against a white person, then you can't defend your business. So that means you set us up a business, then they can just come and take your property, kill you, kill your family, and nobody can go except a white person in your defense. So this is why there's been a not large-scale economic development in the black community because of this threat of this power, which will override the law or use the law. If they can't use the law against you, then they override the law and still take it from you. So now black people, and that's one thing that's pointed out in the Secret Relationship of New Blacks and Jews, Volume 2, black people took the attitude coming out of slavery, going through Jim Crow, that the best thing to do is when you get paid, just spend it all. Because if you save it and try to invest it without any protection or security, they just take it from you.
Mm-hmm. And that's something I really admire about the Nation of Islam, is turning that attitude around and instilling these values in people to set up their own businesses, take responsibility, work hard, and re-empower the community through that process. That's such an important message, and that might be one of the reasons for the hostility that has been showered on the nation for so many years.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and the fact that like Mr. Farrakhan recently in Tennessee State last Saturday on business warfare, you know, he made it very, very clear. He said that the black community must understand that we have a problem with security. And you can't go into business and not be willing to defend yourself and not having an army. He said, look, I have an army. And so his army stood up, everybody had to applaud because Mr. Farrakhan don't travel, you know, by himself. He knows that he must be protected, and we know that our businesses must be protected. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to just lay down while you come and take things from us, and this is what people don't like. Mm-hmm. They don't like the fact that we will defend ourselves.
Cleaning up neighborhoods, getting rid of the drug trade, yeah. The Nation of Islam has had a lot more success with that than really anybody else, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, we have the history, like in Washington, D.C., back in the early 90s with what were called the Dope Busters, where they went into a very bad area of Washington, D.C., where women were afraid to come outside, afraid to let the children out, and they cleaned it up without any weapons and with very little fighting at all, just because of their love and strength, and they know the unity. If you try to knock down one of them brothers with them bow ties, this would be like some ants coming out at you. You ain't just fighting one person.
Yeah.
This is what everybody understands, and therefore they were able to go in and clean it up. But then the Jewish leadership went to Congress and got Jack Kemp to not defund security contracts. And so what happened was things dried up, and now those same housing projects, you know, turned back into war zones. And now we have the mass incarceration of black men and women all across the country based on this drugs and three strikes you out, and cocaine is 100 times more, you get more sentencing for cocaine, 100 times more than for crack cocaine than regular cocaine. So, but we have proven we can go into those areas, and this is what Mr. Farrakhan now is resurrecting. It's called the 10,000 Fearless, And the 10,000 fearless is not to go out and harass or kill white people, but it's for, to have that army ready to protect peacekeeping in the community.
Mm-hmm. Because that scares the powers that be, because they want a monopoly. Now, well, actually, you know, the state is defined by some political scientists as the bureaucracy that claims with plausibility a monopoly on organized violence. So, but the problem is, if that monopoly is corrupt, as it usually is, and if nobody else can raise a finger against it, then we're living under tyranny.
Yeah, well, we're living under tyranny, and the majority of the American people have basically accepted it. Many white people may feel that they have benefited from the government's protection against quote-unquote terrorists and militants and all of those type of stuff. They keep scaring the people to accept this police state, and then they've given up all their rights, the rights that that the people who call themselves white thought they had through the Constitution. They've given them up. Now, we as blacks, we were two-thirds in the Constitution, so, you know, all of our rights are trumped, have been trumped over time.
Yeah.
But now, because of 9-1-1, people who call themselves white have accepted their constitutional rights to be destroyed and walked on. And so we have people walking around with their eyes wide open, acting like they don't even see what's going on around them, but it's because of fear. And when the truth comes to you through the teachings of Honorable Elijah Muhammad, you know, fear is removed. And, you know, one thing I learned when I was a little boy is that, you know, we all go die, and you can't stop it. So since you can't stop death, they said, well, Jesus, he came back. Well, Jesus died. So, you know, he may have came back, but he died. So you go die, and you can't stop it eventually. So why allow somebody to punk you out of life with the threat of death?
Mm-hmm. Well, that goes right back to the teachings of the original teachings of Islam. That it, you know, that's where it differs a little bit from Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just turning the other cheek. It's actually in the Islamic political philosophy, the good people are supposed to take power. And you know, if they don't, like if the Christians community says, well, we're going to just render unto Caesar, and if Caesar is a mafiosi, then you're going to have tyranny. And Islam says, no, you can't accept that. You have to stand up and understand that even if you die resisting tyranny, that you're destined for paradise. So that's actually an honor. So I think that's one reason that Islam, not just the nation of Islam, but Islam in general, scares the powers that be, because it could be not just, you know, 10,000 fearless people. There could be 1.5 billion fearless people.
Well, persecution in Islam, persecution is worse than death. Persecution is worse than death.
Yeah,
so we do not accept persecution. Now, this is what amazes me, is that the Muslims in America, other than the Nation of Islam, seem to be very afraid of even dealing with the prospect that 9-1-1 was an inside job along with the Israeli government. They are the main ones. The Arab Muslims are the ones who have been stuck with this whole issue of 9-1-1, yet they seem to be reticent in fighting back. But Minister Farrakhan, from the very beginning in 2002, 2001 was, you know, 9-1-1, and in his Savior's Day address in 2002, he immediately saw, no, this is not right. How can 19 men who weren't trained well fly these planes into those buildings, and you didn't know anything about it before, but the next day you knew all their names?
Mm-hmm.
Come on now. And they all burnt up. They were all burnt up. So how did you get there? I mean, there were no bodies. I mean, it's just pieces of bodies in that whole World Trade Center thing. So the minister immediately saw something was wrong, but yet people still want to act like they didn't see it because they're afraid. But we in the Nation of Islam, we taught that persecution is worse than death, and to be a punk is just not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So we fight on all fronts with those who fight with us, and we've got to have economic development. Mr. Farrakhan said that business is the business of life. You must be supplying your needs and your wants. You can't be completely dependent on somebody else. Then you are, in fact, putting yourself in a position as a child of somebody else that can be told what to do, moved around without your consent, because you're not willing to take the responsibility of doing something for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so with those who, this is another reason for those 10,000, Mr. Farrakhan said that we have rogue cops, okay? We have people who are benefiting over the moral and economic demise of our community. And when you go in there trying to remove drugs, trying to remove prostitution, trying to clean up the area, there's other people who are benefiting from that. And when they're going to attack the peacekeepers, Mr. Farrakhan said. And when they attack the peacekeepers, then we got to go in with the 10,000 to make an example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was very impressed by that part of his speech last summer in D.C. That was a very amazing event. And it's interesting how the media played that all up as the 10,000 fearless were supposedly going to be killing white people. Completely insane. But they distort these things, trying to divide and conquer and whip up fear.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's very interesting. But actually, by their response to Ms. Farrakhan, said the 10,000 fearless, took the attention away from the other killings that have been done to blacks and the young people's response that they did in Ferguson towards Minister Farrakhan. Everybody was looking at him. Because the plan, as Minister Farrakhan has been talking about, the plan, Ferguson was just the beginning of the plan. In August 17th of 2014, he spoke in Mas Maryam, and he pointed out that what they did in Ferguson in terms of bringing those tanks out and the tear gas, that was just the beginning. They didn't plan to do this in all the major cities, including Chicago. But he said, if y'all try that in Chicago, me and my white brother, Reverend Flager, we're going to go hand in hand in front of the tanks. Now, I was in Chicago at Mas Maryam when the minister said that, and I just jumped up out of my seat. And I guess he was like, what is wrong with Dr. Ridgely? Well, I saw checkmate. Because Mr. Farrakhan said the whole purpose of what you all are doing, killing our people in the streets, you want us to jump. You want us to fight you with weapons. You got all the weapons. You've been taking the surplus weapons from Iraq War, giving them out to the police forces, even to school police forces, to kill our young people. They're waiting for us, trying to egg us on into a fight. And so that's what they've been doing. But then when the Mr. Farrakhan said, I come out there with my white brother, Pastor Flager, in front of the tanks, well, that was checkmate. Because they couldn't shoot Mr. Farrakhan in broad daylight in front of the world. They knew all hell was going to break loose. Because everybody, all the Muslims in the nation would have been there with the minister. So you had to fight every damn body. And then if you backed off, then he would have punked out the American military, so they couldn't afford that. So then they shut that down, and they hid that brother McDonald, who was killed in November. They hid that tape for over a year, okay? Mm-hmm. Because that if that tape had come out in 2014, then the young blacks would have done more than boycott, because the minister also gave the young black people's energy a direction instead of us going out with guns. 10-10-15, he announced the boycott of Christmas. Mm-hmm. And so now that gave us use an economic weapon, which is a lot more effective anyway than military weapons, because military weapons are on the purpose for dominating people's minds so that economically you can benefit from it. You don't take land. You know, you don't take land. You take the land and the people, and you put the people on the land to work. The land ain't no good unless you got a slave. So the key is war is to enslave people for your benefit. Now, when the people no longer want to be a slave, you got a problem. When they want to set up their own economics, you got a problem. When they're not willing to spend their money with you, you got a problem. So Minister Farrakhan, using the tactics of Martin Luther King in his last years, pushing for economic withdrawal to spread the pain a little bit. So now the black folks, when they found out about what happened to the brother in Chicago, they went downtown and just shut downtown down. They didn't go shooting and so forth. They just went and just boycotted, picketed, blocked, and made them lose millions, maybe billions of dollars in Chicago. And that's a better way to fight. But Mr. Farrakhan brought that to them to save their life,
mm-hmm.
because they were intending for them to come out with arms, the young black to come out with arms so they could be shot down. Instead, Mr. Farrakhan said, we're just going to withhold our money.
Mm-hmm.
That's a better way to fight. And then he said, redirect the money. So now he's talking about what they did in Waxahachie, Texas, where the Mazda study group down there, they organized a boycott of the Korean hair store, selling wigs and extensions and all that. Boycotted them and then directed them to 2.5 blocks down the street to a black beauty supply. And you can go on the internet, the Waxahachie, to Google, Waxahachie, and you will see that that was a very successful campaign. And now that's the model, of boycotting one section and pushing the consumer, the black consumer, to his own.
It's interesting you're saying this, because John Perkins, the economic hitman, was on the show Friday mm-hmm. evening. And he was saying that this kind of tactic is the most effective tactic. He said, maybe you shouldn't even really bother to vote or even pay any attention to elections. That doesn't change anything, he said. But if you boycott the right corporation, you come after them in the right way, you put pressure, you write enough letters. He said sometimes the CEOs actually want to do the right thing. So it's this pressuring, economic pressure, that he thought is the most powerful tool that ordinary people have at their disposal.
Yes.
Hey, I'm sorry. I think we just got cut off.
What happened?
I don't know.
Okay.
I have all kinds of strange glitches that go on the computer, so who knows? Maybe somebody's reminding me that they're listening. I don't know. Anyway, I was saying, as John Perkins, economic hitman, says, that this kind of tactic, economic boycotts and that kind of economic pressure, is the most powerful tool that ordinary people have.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's something, wars are for economic, even though they may call it religious wars. But actually, it's for the control of resources and land and markets. That's what wars are fought for. And so if you can in fact change people's behavior in terms of their spending without going to physical war, you're doing the same thing. Because in the end, that's what supports the military-industrial complex, is you spending your money, and they can tax you. But when you stop spending your money with the corporations and the businesses that are oppressing you, then they have a problem. And this is what we must start doing. And unfortunately, in the black community, I've been in business a number of times. And I know one time I was in business, and these young black guys were out in front of my business. And I said, man, it don't look good. Y'all just hanging out in front of my store. They said, well, you ain't supposed to be in business nowhere. That's a white man's thing. So that's a type of attitude that we have in the black community that now Mr. Farrakhan is breaking that syndrome, that is, it's not okay. You shouldn't be in business. All you should be doing is working on a job. I had a situation, a friend of mine who was an independent businessman. He was a salesperson. He produced, had incense and oils and so forth. He was, he was grossing about $70,000 a year. He wanted to marry. And the father of the young lady said he couldn't marry her because he didn't have a job. The man was, he was independent. $70,000, man. What the hell are you talking about? You have a job. No, you must be working for the white man. You got to work for the white man. So if you're doing that, then you can marry my daughter. And this is the type of mentality mm-hmm. that is pervaded in the black community, going back to like 1921, when you had a Black Wall Street. You had over 600 businesses. And so what they do, they air-bombed them. They used planes for the first time against American citizens to destroy a whole community. And then when they ran the black folks out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, they couldn't come back to Tulsa, Oklahoma, unless they had a piece of paper stating what white person they was working for. That they was not going to allow that whole independent concept to come back into the city. So black people heard those stories, the relatives, like they heard about the lynchings in the South, and many of those lynchings in the South, only 5% of those lynchings in the South whatever having anything to do with some rapist on white woman. It was really, it was for political and economic oppression. You had black men and women who had businesses and were powerful politically in certain areas, small towns, and they couldn't stop them, so they found an excuse to lynch them and then kind of claimed that they looked at some white woman. No, some white woman looked at them because they had money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was terrorizing a whole community.
Yeah, it was terrorizing the whole community. That's what real terrorism, They're talking about 9-1-1. The real terrorism has been since we've been brought over here as slaves for 460 years, we have suffered real terrorism, where it is in fact, our humanity was denied, even by the Pope. That started it back in 1455. It started it when they said that we were not human, and therefore our properties can be taken and our lives can be put into slavery forever because we don't count. And so since 1555, we've been over here in America. We've been suffering that fate. And whenever we try to do business, it's brought to our attention that we don't have the right to do that. And white people will have been boycotting us for 460 years. So we're just trying to repay the favor and let them see what it feels like to have a boycott on them. Maybe then we can come to the table and talk. And we don't have to be fighting forever. But at least we got to have a little bit of tete-a-tete. You know, in other words, you all have done this to us, and now we need to organize to do this to you. And then it's not even a bad thing, because we got to have our own. We have to have something for our children. Right now, we don't know what to tell our children to go into school to do, because right now, I think you probably heard this, that they're saying that over the next 20 or so years, 30% of all new jobs develop going to robots.
Yeah. Well, that's another long-term trend that it's very worrisome. I mean, you talk about what's been going on for 500 years since the Pope said that black people and Native Americans are not human, so go ahead and just, you know, totally exploit them. The corporation has arisen as this new institution that dominates everything with corporate personhood, limited liability, so they're not responsible for what they do. All of these structural issues have created this world we're in now, where it seems like a very small minority of people, a smaller and smaller minority every year, have just about everything. And with automation, they don't need ordinary people to make stuff anymore. So suddenly we've got the situation where the billionaires are going to look around and say, wow, look at these, 7 billion surplus eaters.
Yep.
So maybe it's ordinary people at the lower end of the economic spectrum that need to be standing up and resisting. And the nation's doing that. But I think we need a lot of other groups to follow that same model.
Well, you know, most people, I put it like this. You know, most people just want to drink beer and have babies. Okay? They don't want to be bothered with all these political issues. They just want to have fun. All right? But I'm sorry, the world's not like that. You do have evil people who got plans against you and your baby. So you just can't drink beer and have babies and not get involved in the economics and the politics. You have to take control of yourself and your community. I have a mantra that either you control the community that you live in or you move to a community that you can control. You can't live in a community with a bunch of savage people who do not have your best interest in mind and are in fact pushed on, ignored by the system. I had a business, another business, and it was broken. My truck was broken into, my stuff was stolen, and the police basically wasn't going to do anything about it. So who do you think did it? I said, well, if I know who did it, I'd go get my stuff. Then when I found my stuff, they wouldn't go get it. I had to catch the people with it at the flea market, call the police. I said, I got my stuff. They said, how'd you find it? I said, look, do I have to arrest them now? Or are you going to come and get them? So So how can you, as a black business person, how can you go into business in an environment where you got no protection under the law?
Yeah.
And instead, every time you turn around, they come from new regulations on, new codes that restrict you, but you got no benefit from the restriction. You don't have no protection.
Well, a lot of the regulations are designed to stop competition from threatening the people who already monopolize it.
Well, I mean, I don't blame the people doing that. I mean, there was I saw on a TV program, there was some type of question and answer type of thing, some type of show up here, and they said, well, who when they became head of the SEC outlawed all the ways that he got rich, and the answer was Joseph Kennedy. So Joseph Kennedy, the father of John Robert Kennedy, he made his money through alcohol and then other scams in terms of securities, And then he became head of SEC and outlawed all the things that he used to get where he's at. So that's what the politics is about. It's about protecting those who have the power and the money. And they use their money to get political power, so they make laws to protect them from you doing the very thing that they did to get their money.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it was Balzac who said, behind every great fortune, there's a great crime.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because the way things should be is people should get a return on their labor and investment. But, you know, everybody don't want to work. You know, you got people who want people to be their slaves, who want other folks to do all the work, and they get the benefits. So then they steal, and then they have to have army and laws to protect what they've stolen. And this is passed down from generation to generation. So we have young white people riding around in Mercedes-Benz and et cetera, and it's nothing that they did. It's something their grandfather did. But yet for most black people, you couldn't get a patent unless you worked for a white company. Or you had to sell your patent. You could get a patent, but you couldn't produce anything with it because they won't give you the money, and they won't go buy it from you in terms of the product. So what you had to do was to sell your patent to some white person so they could take it and manufacture it. Or if you had even a song, okay, they wind up being owned by the label and not by the writer.
Think of how much money has been swindled from African-American musicians and artists over the years.
Yeah, yeah. And whenever somebody like John Coltrane, Sam Cooke, when they start talking about setting up independent labels, all of a sudden they get killed.
Yeah, Jimi Hendrix, too. I mean, he was worth more dead than alive when he died.
Yeah. So the issue of being able to benefit from our talent, as I'm in the Farrakhan, it's saying our community should benefit from our talent, our resource. You know, you have some country that got oil, the Arabs got oil. What we have is we have football, basketball, baseball, singing and dancing talent. You know, it ain't a game.
Speaking of the musical talent, what's your take on the people? And there are a lot of folks, especially like in the hip hop community, who greatly admire the Honorable Minister Farrakhan, who say that there is a kind of an Illuminati, organized crime cabal, synagogue of Satan type thing, running Hollywood and the music industry. Is there some truth to that?
Well, I mean, you know, you read what I read, and I mean, you know, I read a whole bunch of stuff on it. And the fact is that most of our entertainers die broke. Okay, I mean, look at Red Fox. You know, look at Miles Davis. I mean, they die broke. So what's going on with their money? They made all this money. Who got it? Well, something is going on. Same thing with the ball players. They die broke. So there's a game being played, and we need to accept that there's a game. And then that's why we had to have our own managers, our own lawyers for our stars. And ball players, our own management team, because what they do. I mean, I got to admire LeBron James. LeBron James, he didn't go to college, and he uses money to pay for his homies. I saw it on 60 Minutes a number of years ago. I was so proud of him. He uses money to send his homies, the guys he went to high school with, send them to college, still around and manage his businesses. I like that.
Well, that's great, yeah.
You know what I mean? Instead of having somebody like Tony Dorsett, having somebody manage his money and put all his money in the dried up oil wells, Scottie Pippen, putting his money in an airplane that never flew, that wouldn't fly. So it's a shame, and a sham was being played. And then Mr. Farrakhan pointed out, all of a sudden he's called anti-Semitic, but they never can disprove what he says as being a lie. In other words, they can't come out and show. If Mr. Farrakhan says this, you can't come out and show it that's a lie. All that you do is call him names.
Yeah, they never debate the facts, do they? They just want to call names.
Never debate the facts. That's weak.
Yeah. Okay?
And people are now looking through that. And more people, I mean, look at the young people who were Bernie Sanders. More and more young people are realizing that they don't have a future unless things change. And now that Cuba has been opened up, and Mr. Farrakhan, you know, he talks a lot of great things about Cuba, and he brought me down there with him in 2006. And Cuba is impressive.
Mm-hmm. They got, yeah, they got guts. Yeah, Fidel, they tried to kill him 600 times.
And they live longer than Americans, and they've been under a boycott for 50 years, under sanctions for over 50 years, and yet they're able to provide free education, free health care. What's going on here? And America is one of the richest, slowly the richest country in the world, and yet here are young people coming out of college with debt they can never repay.
Yeah, how is that? Yeah, Cuba, this poor country, can provide free health care, free education, get life expectancy equivalent to the U.S. For a fraction of the cost. And yet, when Bernie Sanders proposes some pretty mild programs, really nothing even compared to what Western Europe has, then the establishment, Hillary Clinton and those people all say, oh, we can't do that. That's impossible. That's too revolutionary. It's too ambitious. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Well, the people, there are more and more young people who are not going for it. I don't know what's on the older people's minds that they would still think. Well, I guess a lot of the older people who they're doing, they're getting what they call, they're getting a check in the mail from their the residual incomes. In other words, they own stocks and bonds and stuff like that. They're not actually working for their money, and they're making money off other people.
Yeah,
and so they don't want to have to go to work again. And so they see that anything that's trying to change the status quo, trying to take the money from the bankers and the corporations and give it to the regular people, is taking money out of their pocket. And so they're defending their piece of the pie.
Yeah.
And yet the whole pie is corrupt and is falling apart. And what they want, the big boys want, is another some type of race war, religious war, World War III, you know, something to get the people off their behinds, because there are people now who are realizing, whoa, I know you use this black and white thing. You scapegoated blacks and hidden the fact that you as a friend to blacks has really been taking money from the black and the white, and now you run everything through your economic power, and now people are tired of it. And the blacks, you know, they tried to get us to go to war, race war, in 2014, 2015, but Mr. Farrakhan, in my opinion, jumped in and stopped that. So that we don't have a race war. They're trying to get a religious war. They can't get that going. And then they're going to bring in the Saudi and stick Saudi with 911.
Yeah, where do you think that's a limited hangout?
Excuse me?
Do you think that's a limited hangout? This, they're going to release the 28 pages, and there's a bill in Congress to make it possible to sue foreign governments for 911. And, of course, maybe we should be suing Israel, too. But in any case, some people think this could open up the whole thing, reopen the case, and others say, oh, it's probably just going to be a limited hangout.
Yeah, well, they're just going to hang Saudi out with the 28 pages. They've been holding it back just for this time frame. Why the Saudis have gone for this, I don't know, but I think they are part of it. They're accepting this, the fall, because they can't tell the truth about what happened. See, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, in his first Savior's Day address after he reestablished the Nation of Islam, made a statement about who all was involved with the conspiracy to kill the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And there were family members, hypocrites in the Nation of Islam, the government of the United States, and he mentioned the Arabs. And when the Minister Farrakhan tried to reestablish the Nation of Islam, he told us that many powerful religious leaders in the Arab world was going to give him money to teach Islam, as long as he did not mention the name of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. So this is why, if you go to the time, what must be done, number 33, and then the series, the 58-week series of the time what must be done on the Internet, you'll see that Mr. Farrakhan clearly breaks the Nation of Islam from the Arab world, because they have, in fact, allowed themselves to be, he said, the Prophet Muhammad said, the four generations after him, that Islam would not be of him. And so now we have, whereas the Muslim world is dependent on arms and weapons from the West, and the Nation of Islam has no arms and weapons that you see, because we don't carry those, yet we can stand up against America within America. But yet people who have their own country have to use the weapons of America and wind up get killed in the process because you're using their weapons, and we're taught not to do that. Now, of course, you bring a weapon, we're going to take it from you, but we're not going to be an aggressor with a weapon, because we actually do believe that we have a weapon. And it's not that we control. We believe that the person who came over here, Master Farrakhan Muhammad, he has a weapon. He's on a plane in the air, and it can beat everything out there. That's what we believe. So we don't carry weapons.
All right. Emmy and brother. Well, hey, I think we've hit the end of the hour, but it's been a fascinating conversation, and I really appreciate your courage in telling the truth about all these things. I appreciate the way the Nation of Islam has carried the torch on 9/11 truth when really no other Muslim group has. And it's a real honor for the nation, and it's a shame on the rest of the Muslim world. But maybe they'll catch up, God willing.
Well, yeah. I'd like to thank you. You know, you gave an interview that that we put up on our website, and we appreciate that. And you interviewed me. We appreciate your strong stance and your willingness to stand with us and to continue to push this struggle. So we find there's more and more people out there who want to fight. So we're just going to continue to stand out there, be the vanguard, and hopefully the rest of the American people will wake up and decide to join on to this struggle, because we're trying to free everybody.
All right. Well, onward to truth and justice. Thank you so much, Dr. Ridgely Abdul-Mumin Muhammad of the Nation of Islam. Your title is the Minister of Agriculture, is it? Or?
Well, the Student Minister of Agriculture.
Student Minister of Agriculture.
Yeah, because, you know, we're still learning. But, yeah, that's my I tell people, they say, how's the farm? I said, the farm is fine. You need to ask how I am. They said, well, you know, I said, I'm not farming. The farm is farming me. Okay, you got a little vegetable garden. You talked about it.
Okay, a little vegetable garden. My wife's yelling at me because I'm producing too much food now.
Oh, okay. Because she got to prepare it all, huh?
Yeah.
But anyway, Mama Nature she ain't no joke. You got to go according to her rules and regulations.
That's right. And I got to get back out there and plant some more today because it's a perfect day. So thank you again, Dr. Ridgely Abdul-Mumin Muhammad. Keep up the good work. God bless you. Assalamu alaikum.
In Islam, sir.
Young America, you get food to eat. Don't have to run through the jungle and scuff up your feet. You just sing about Jesus and drink wine all day. Yeah, Lord, it's great to be in America. Ain't no lion or tiger, ain't no mama snake, no. Just the sweet watermelon and the buckwheat Everybody is as happy as a man can be. Climb aboard, little one, sail away with me. Sail away.
Sail away.
Why don't you sail away?
Sail away.
'Cause I know we will cross this mighty ocean in the Charleston Bay. Mighty ocean in the Charleston Bay. His family, and you'll be as happy as a monkey in a monkey tree. Aren't you glad you're all gonna be in America? So sail away.